Talk Shoes.
Recorded live.
All right. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Pastor Eli James here with a guest and co-host, William Fink. We're going to be talking this evening again about the two seed line issue, going into Genesis chapter 17 and talking about the various covenants between Yahweh and Abraham and, of course, Israel. But first, I want to back up a little bit and because I've been doing some research in the book of Jubilees and the book of Jasher regarding Noah's flood. And we know that Noah was perfect in his generations, and that word generations is translated from the Hebrew toledah, which means descent, okay? It is basically saying that Noah was perfect in his descent. He was of unmixed race. He was of pure race. He was of pure Adamic race. That's what that statement means, folks. And it doesn't mean he was morally upright, because if it meant that, then the rest of the statement would be redundant, because it also says he was a just man, a good and just man. I'm going to quote first from the book of Jubilees, chapter 5, verses 1 through 9. And it happened when the sons of the children of men commenced to increase over the face of the whole earth, and daughters were born unto them. And of course, by men, we're talking Adamites. That the angels of the Lord, now I remember you, Bill, you wanted to translate this, the, what was the angels of heaven?
No, instead of the sons of man in Genesis 6, 1 to 4, it should say the sons of heaven.
Sons of heaven, okay.
And that's wholly correctable, and that can be corrected from the apocryphal literature, I mean the Book of Enoch, and from the Alexandrian Septuagint.
Right. Now here in the Book of Jubilees, it's translated. Of course, we have to, you know, understand that these translators are biased by the Judeo-Christian point of view, okay? And this translator has chosen to say this, that the angels of the Lord, now, of course, the angels is not necessarily good angels or bad angels, okay?
Right, and that would be the sons of heaven.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And, of course, Lord, I don't know if they have the same protocol here. It's L, capital L, small case, O-R-D. So it's certainly
well,
not.
It's probably a stand-in for Yahweh, because most of that literature was copied in the period of the Pharisees and the restrictions on the use of that name in the first century B.C.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And that the angels of the Lord saw them in 1 year of this Jubilee. I forget which one this is. The 55th Jubilee, I believe. That they were beautiful to look upon, and they took unto themselves wives from all of them whomever they chose, and they bore them sons, and these were giants. So obviously we're talking about the same scenario, that the sons of heaven came down, left their first estate, and started mating with Adamic women, okay? Verse 2, and injustice increased over the earth, and all flesh corrupted its way. Now it says the flesh corrupted its way, meaning the DNA, meaning the life pattern of each species, of each race, from men to animals and to beasts and to birds and to all that walks upon the earth. Now, it can't possibly be moral corruption here, because birds and beasts and animals don't have morality, folks. We're talking about the corruption of their DNA. All corrupted their ways and their orders and began to devour each other. And unrighteousness increased over the earth, and all the thoughts and the knowledge of all the sons of men was thus wicked all the days. And the Lord looked upon the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, and all flesh corrupted its order. Order, okay? Genesis chapter 1, kind after kind, like begets like. It's out of order now. And they all did evil before his eyes, all that were on the earth. You had a comment there, Bill?
Well, I can interject something.
Sure.
This is the same thing that Jude talks about when he talks about the angels that left their first estate, and he connects that to the way of Cain, the gainsaying of Korah. He connects all the clouds without water, meaning the people that have no spirit,
right,
who are in the gloom of darkness forever, and the way of Cain and the gainsaying of Korah and all that, it's rebellion from Yahweh, and he's connecting these spots on your feast of charity, feasting together with you without fear, and they're the mixed races, and that's who he was talking about.
Yes.
Descendants of the fallen angels who are the other and mixed races.
Yes,
people that are mixed with us also to appear like us.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Or you know, in the 20s and 30s, they had a saying that so-and-so is white enough.
You're right.
You know, in other words, to get into white clubs and venues and social events. And that was a popular saying back then.
Right, right. Now you have to be black to get
in. Yeah, really.
Okay, verse 4.
Or a yarmulke.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. Yeah. Yarmulke in any color of skin. That'll get you in. Verse 4. And he said, quote, I shall destroy mankind and all flesh that has been created above the face of the earth. And Noah alone found grace before the eyes of the Lord. And concerning the angels whom he had sent upon the earth, he was greatly enraged that he would root them out of all of their power. And he said to us that we should bind them in the depths of the earth. Now, isn't that exactly what Jude tells us, that they've been bound in the depths of the earth?
Right, Jude, and I think Peter and 2 Peter also tells us that. And,
yes.
And the Revelation tells us that they would be loosed. And I believe that that's a symbol of the Enlightenment and the Jews gaining influence over our society again.
Right. So this stuff is in perfect accord with the rest of the Bible as we know it. And behold, they are bound in the midst of them, the depths, and separate. And against their children came a word from before the face of Yahweh that they should be slain with the sword and be removed from under heaven. And he said, my spirit shall not abide over men forever, for they are flesh, and let their days be 120 years. I know you had a comment when we covered that in Genesis chapter 6.
Well, yeah, when you read the apocryphal literature and the Septuagint writing and things like that, that 120 years isn't a lot of most pastors take that to mean that men should live to be 120 years old from now on, or from that point on.
Yes.
And that's not what it's saying. What it's saying is that it'll be 120 years before Yahweh brings a flood upon this old world and destroys it.
Right, and then that'll be verified when I quote from the book of Jasher, okay? And he sent into their midst his sword that each should slay his neighbor. And they began to slay one the other until they all fell upon the sword and were destroyed from the earth. And the fathers witnessed it. And after this, these were bound in the depths of the earth, repeating the fact that they were bound in the depths of the earth, until the day of the great judgment for the coming of punishment unto eternity over all those who have corrupted their ways and their works before the Lord. Okay? So it's very much in total synchronicity with what we're taught in the Bible. Absolutely no deviation, maybe a couple extra tidbits of information for us to think about here. Okay, now I'm going to switch to the book of Jasher, chapter 4, verses 16 through 18. Again, we're talking about the, this is just before, this is Noah, this is just before the flood of Noah again. Okay, verse 16. And all the sons of men departed from the ways of the Lord in those days, and they multiplied upon the face of the earth with sons and daughters, and they taught one another their evil practices, and they continued sinning against Yahweh. And every man made unto himself a god, and they robbed and plundered every man his neighbor as well as his relative, and they corrupted the earth, and the earth was filled with violence. Now this is really good, folks, verse 18. And their judges and rulers went to the daughters of men, and took their wives by force, from their husbands according to their choice. And the sons of men in those days took from the cattle of the earth and the beasts of the field and the fowls of the air and taught the mixture of animals of one species with the other in order therewith to provoke the Lord. And God saw the whole earth and it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted its ways upon the earth, all men and all animals. So here it just lays it right out, folks. Let me repeat this one line. And taught the mixture of animals of one species with the other. We're talking hybridization, folks. That's exactly the problem. That's what happened in the garden. That's what happened to Eve. It's called race mixing, folks. It's called hybridization. It's called tampering with the natural order that Yahweh created, playing God. And don't you know that Monsanto and other Jewish so-called agribusiness corporations are doing exactly the same thing today by creating hybrid species of corn and wheat and what have you. They are violating Yahweh's laws not to mix species.
And their hybrid species creation creation goes way beyond just mixing plants with plants.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're putting fish genes
right.
in certain types of tomatoes.
That's right.
That's just an abomination. That's
yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And only a Jew could promote that. That's
right,
right. They're the authors of confusion.
Right. Absolutely. And Jesus said, it shall be as in the days of Noah.
Yes, he did.
We're
that's
getting,
what it is.
Yeah, race mixing and hybridization to the hilt is what's happening today. There's simply no doubt that what we're seeing in the world today is just as corrupt, if not worse.
Right. It's happening on the streets of the cities. It's happening on the farms in the country. It's happening in the laboratories. It's happening
yeah.
everywhere.
Yeah, and so if anybody thinks that this world is not going to be judged, given the exact repeat, probably on a way more massive scale today than it was in the days of Noah, you're kidding yourself. This planet is getting ready to be judged big time, okay? So I just wanted to report, you know, from the books of Jubilees and Jasher, our two-C line interpretation of the Holy Scriptures is right on the money, folks. It's right on the money. You can't argue with this, okay?
Right. Even if they argue with the veracity of those particular books, it cannot be disputed that those particular books are 2,000 years old
mm-hmm.
and reflect how ancient writers interpreted the book of Genesis.
Right.
And we see it not only in these books, but you know, I had elucidated all of this when we discussed Genesis chapter 6,
mm-hmm.
and I did not quote either of these books.
Yes. Yes.
And still, I believe, prove the point through Enoch and Jude and Peter.
Right.
And these books just support that view.
Absolutely. And Enoch is even greater detail because it names the angels themselves, gives the names of the fallen angels involved, and it's even more detailed than Jasher and Jubilees. Yeah, yeah. Okay. All right, so let's go back into Genesis chapter 17.
Well, real quick, on my website, on my copy of my essay, The Problem with Genesis 6, 1 to 4,
okay.
all the way at the bottom, if you scroll down and click on a PDF icon down there, you'll see that verse from the book of Jasher
okay.
and the page it's on. And I just wanted, if anybody wanted to actually see what you just read,
right.
I scanned
right.
that book, that page, into
yeah.
a PDF file and put it on my website.
Yeah. And one other thing, I know that all of these books, these ancient books, and of course the Book of Enoch had disappeared for many hundreds of years before it was rediscovered. And a lot of people want to question the authenticity of these books. Obviously, the King James Version, the Masoretic text, and even to some extent the Septuagint, have all been corrupted to some degree or another, okay? So you really can't impugn the book of Jasher, the book of Jude. You just can't write them off and say, well, they're not canonical. Well, you know, the Constantine was not a Christian. Constantine, who convened the Council of Nicaea, was in fact a pagan. He didn't convert to Christianity on his deathbed. Okay.
And a lot of people have the misconception that Constantine made Christianity the state religion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not true at all. There were pagan emperors after Constantine.
Right, right.
But Constantine decriminalized Christianity.
Right.
That's all he did.
That's all he did. And it was just a political move. He wasn't even a Christian himself. You know, his mother was, but he himself was not. He was pretty much just an opportunistic politician who made a compromise that brought peace to the land, okay? And then the Council of Nicaea was, they left out so many books, you know, that should have been included. And, you know, my position on that is, you know, are you going to trust a bunch of Catholics or pre-Catholics to tell us what should be in the Bible and what shouldn't be in the Bible? You know, what's consistent is more important. And these books, Jubilees, Enoch, and Jasher, are, in my opinion, totally consistent with the story in the Bible. It's just totally consistent. And then within these books, you know, we have problems of translation, like the false use of the word Gentile. But,
and there's some clear pericopes that were added to Jasher.
Yes, yes. And that can all be resolved. All that kind of stuff can be resolved. And we know that these problems are... I don't want to say endemic, but they're it's a problem that repeats itself over and over. And when you have a problem that repeats itself over and over, and you analyze it, you find out, you know, what the source of the problem is. For example, the source of the word Gentile that never should have been put in the Bible at all. And it's the source of that false translation is Judaism, because they want us to believe that a Gentile is a non-Jew, but the Bible's not about Jews, and that word should always be nation, or in many cases it should be translated as race. It should never be translated as Gentile. And once you understand that there is a consistent pattern of deception, once you discover this consistent pattern of deception, then you just go back and then you change. You know, in fact, I just got an email today from a person who's new to the movement, and he said, "Well, I've just gone through my Bible and scratched out the word Lord and replaced it with Yahweh." You know, okay, and so because the word Yahweh should be wherever the tetragrammaton is, it shouldn't be Lord; it should be Yahweh. Okay, and so. So he's done that, and people are taking it upon themselves to make these changes on their own. Okay, since we don't have a properly translated King James Version as of yet. Okay, but this is what you have to do. This is the approach you have to take, because this is, folks, this is the word of Yahweh through his prophets. But the translations have been doctored. The translations are problematical, and that's what we're trying to do here in this series, and also on Yahweh's Covenant People. Studying the Bible in depth to show that the King James Version has translational problems, and by strict and studious analysis, we can determine what those problems are. And anybody who wants to disagree with us, fine, no problem. This is what it's all about. It's free speech, folks. Okay.
Yeah. I'm about to cite two verses from the King James that have serious translational problems.
Okay, in Genesis 17 or?
Well, related to Genesis 17.
What, do you want to cite them now or?
Well, yeah, Genesis 17:10. I mean, that's where I'd like to pick up our discussion of the promises to Abraham. I know
okay.
We covered it last week.
Yes.
I would just like to recap it.
Okay.
And the Genesis 17:1-10. And when Abram was 99 years old, the Lord appeared to Abram and said unto him, I am the Almighty God, walk before me, and thou be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And I will make my covenant between me and thee, and will multiply thee exceedingly. And Abram fell on his face, and God talked with him, saying, As for me, behold, my covenant is with thee, and thou shalt be a father of many nations.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Catholic Church teaches that many nations will be Abraham's children,
mm-hmm.
that the nations that he will be, that he pre-existed, and these nations that are strange to him
mm-hmm.
become his children.
Right.
But that's not what the promise is saying, that he will be the father of many nations.
Right. Right.
Neither shall thy name be called Abram, but thou shalt be called Abraham,
mm-hmm.
for a father of many nations have I made thee. This is where Paul talks about calling things into existence which don't exist yet.
Right, right. And it doesn't say I have made many churches.
Yeah, right.
Or denominations of you.
And it says, and I will make thee exceedingly fruitful.
Right.
And that means that it comes from his own seed.
Well, yeah, it's talking about offspring again, and of course, since the Jews aren't exceedingly fruitful, have never been exceedingly fruitful anywhere they've gone, this can't be talking about Jews. It's just about any other ethnic group you can think of.
Absolutely.
It's more plentiful than Jews.
They're a withered branch.
That's right. So if it was about Jews, I would say, I would make you rare. Not exceedingly fruitful. I will
right.
limit your offspring to 6 million.
Okay. And the population of the world, of the Adamic world, when Abraham
yes.
was made this promise, was only in the millions, perhaps.
Well, yeah, and also before the white race enabled other nations, such as in Africa, to explode in their population by giving them the benefits of our technology, et cetera,
right.
et cetera.
Right, they were all scarce. They were all very scarce.
They were all scarce compared to us.
And that's why there were only 1 billion people on a planet 100 years ago,
yeah,
and now there's 5 billion.
Yeah,
They've had the benefit of our technology, of our food, of our know-how.
Yeah, our agricultural techniques, yes, exactly. It's only because we have provided all these benefits to the rest of the other races that their populations have exploded at all.
Absolutely.
That's the only reason. Okay. All right, please continue.
Verse 6 in Genesis 17, and I will make thee exceedingly fruitful, and I will make nations of thee, and kings shall come out of thy loins. And this is, and kings shall come out of thee, I'm sorry.
Yes.
And I will establish my covenant between me and thee and thy seed.
Mm-hmm.
And all this is connected, the kings coming out of him,
right,
the nations which are of him, his seed. It's all connected in the one. It's the one picture, the descendants of Abraham.
Right.
And I will
right.
give unto thee and to thy seed after thee.
Yes.
And this promise, and the church likes to teach that this changed in the New Testament, and that's a flat-out lie.
Mm-hmm.
And in Luke, I'm going to quote two verses in my own translation that are severely mistranslated in the King James.
Okay.
And that make it extremely clear that Paul and Luke both knew who they were going to with this message.
Right. Okay.
And Acts, well, I'll start with Luke 2:30-31. Because, and this is the elderly man in the temple who sees the Christ child.
Mm-hmm.
And he had been waiting all that time, and he was waiting to die, actually. He was so old. But he was told that he would see the salvation of Israel before he passed on. And he sees the Christ child about to be baptized in the temple, and he says, because my eyes have seen your salvation, which you have prepared in front of all the people, and he's talking to Yahweh, a light for the revelation of the nations and honor of your people, Israel. And I can argue the Greek, and that's clearly what it says.
Mm-hmm.
The nations and the honor are both of his people, Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the Greek grammar says, and It's actually a hendiadys, the Greek grammatical construct,
mm-hmm.
and that alone, if you examine the Greek, would prove that these are both the same thing, and both belong to his people Israel.
Right.
And the revelation of the nations couldn't happen until after the crucifixion of Christ,
mm-hmm. okay.
because Israel was estranged from Yahweh.
Right.
And Christ affected the reconciliation of Israel and Yahweh. And that's the whole theme of redemption. And there is nothing else to redemption. There's no bringing anybody else into the covenant or anything like that.
No.
That's the whole sum of prophecy and the fulfillment of the law and the prophets.
Yes, yes.
It is Yahshua Christ's death and resurrection and reconciliation of Israel to Yahweh.
Right, and as we were just saying, and confirming from Jubilees and Jasher, that Yahweh hates race mixing, Yahweh hates hybridization. So this seed, and in Genesis chapter 1, 2, and 3, we're talking about the kind after kind and like begetting like. There is no exception to this, folks. You cannot graft a non-Israelite seed into Israel and call them Israel. You can't. That's against the law. Okay. All right. So let me pick it up then from verse 8. And I will give to you and to your seed after you the land wherein you are a stranger, all the land of Canaan for an everlasting possession, and I will be their God. And of course, that's predicting the Egyptian captivity, verse 9. And God said to Abraham, you shall keep my covenant, therefore, you and your seed after you in their generations. This is my covenant, which you shall keep between me and you and your seed after you. I mean, it's the repetition of this word seed. Of course, this means descendants, folks. It doesn't
Absolutely.
Mean believers or followers. It means descendants.
And when we get to the New Testament, we see it's very clear. And we're covering Romans in the other program that we do, and we're covering Romans chapter 4, and that's all about the promises which Yahweh made to Abraham and
yes.
their fulfillment in the Romans
right.
in part.
Yeah, and actually we were supposed to cover that tomorrow, but let me make a quick announcement. Tomorrow I'm going to have a special guest, Dr. Rebecca Carley, and she's going to be on the show to talk about this phony swine flu epidemic. And so since it's very topical and in the news right now, we've made a change to tomorrow's program. It's going to be Dr. Rebecca Carley, okay? So let me continue here, verse 10. Yeah, go ahead.
There's one more New Testament verse I'd like to bring up in connection to this.
Okay.
And it's another verse that the King James Version severely mistranslates.
All right.
And it's Acts 9:15.
Okay.
And my translation is, but the prince, meaning Yahshua, or the Lord, said to him, go. And this is right after Paul's vision on the road to Damascus.
Okay.
But go, for he is a chosen vessel, a vessel chosen by me, who is to bear my name
mm-hmm.
before both the nations and the kings of the sons of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And my translation notes prove that that's what that verse should say, and I cite Thayer's lexicon and general sources to explain how the word te, which means and, but it's not conjunctive like and, like kahi is, K-A-I is the usual Greek word for and.
Mm-hmm.
This is T-E, and this is adjunctive, which means that the two things that it's connected are inherently related to each other.
Okay.
Thayer explains this very well, and that's the word used here.
Right.
Along with the articles and the way the te or te is, the conjunction is used, shows that both the nations and the kings of the sons of Israel are the same people.
Mm-hmm.
That they're all, it's not, the King James translates this, the nations and kings and the sons of Israel, and that's wrong.
Right.
That's not the way it should be.
Yes.
It's both the nations and the kings of the sons of Israel is the proper translation here, and that can be demonstrated from Greek grammar, but every other translator misses it because they don't know that they don't understand the context of the book.
Right.
So they,
right.
What they do is they contort the meaning of the Greek to match their universalistic
right.
Outlook on the scripture.
Right. Well,
by separating the nations and the kings from the sons of Israel.
Right.
Where Abraham was told that these nations would come of his loins and these kings would come of his loins.
Mm-hmm.
And they would come of his seed.
Exactly, exactly.
And the translation is polluted to reflect a universalism that shouldn't be there.
Right, just the simple addition of the word and makes it seem like that nations and the people of Israel mean two different things. Yes.
Exactly, and they take yes. a word that should be translated both and they make it and.
Right. But and another way of doing it is to make it in a positive instead of the word and, simply a comma, okay? So nations, comma, the children of Israel, okay? And that's legitimate instead of the word and, okay? And
well,
that
right.
comma
or a colon or anything.
Yeah, well, yeah, a comma
that shows
that
these ideas are all connected.
Right.
That these objects are all one and the same.
Yes.
And that's the way it that's the way, in context
yeah.
of the Bible, the verse must be rendered.
Right.
And to make them two separate things is, well, it goes against the Greek grammar and it goes against the context of the Bible.
Right, right. There's that famous, the real famous comma, and I believe it's in Luke, where Jesus says, this day thou shalt be with me in paradise. I'm just paraphrasing right now.
Right, but I could argue, I mean, we could argue about that until we're blue in the face.
Just pointing out that the word and or a comma inserted in the wrong place can drastically change the meaning.
Yes, it can. It can, absolutely.
Yeah, and so in other words, it can be interpreted that this day thou shalt be with me in paradise. You know, but if you put the comma in a different place, it's simply I'm just saying this day.
Right, and
I'm saying
and in
this
order
day.
To avoid that,
yes.
In order to avoid that, we have to translate the New Testament in the context of the promises in the Old Testament.
That's right. That's
and
right.
Luke and Paul, they vociferate Old Testament scripture in relation to Israel and those promises over and over again.
Mm-hmm. So I say to you this day that we shall all be in paradise. And if you don't know where to put the comma, you won't know what I mean. So, yeah, and this type of discussion, of course, when the Judeo-Christian churches interpret the New Testament, they utterly disregard the Old Testament. They just utterly disregard it. And many of them create this new religion called New Testament Christianity, okay, which is a complete fraud because, as you just said, you cannot interpret these things without referring back to the promises and the prophecies. You just cannot. Otherwise, you're creating a false religion. And that's exactly what Judaic Christianity is. Okay, let's proceed to verse 11. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, okay. And then every man child among you shall be circumcised. Okay, we didn't quote that part of verse 10. Any comments before proceeding to 11 and 12 about circumcision?
No, I honestly don't have another comment until we get up to about verses 20 and 21.
Okay.
Okay.
Right. Well, I think we can pretty much disregard let me skip down to 15. But the essence of 11 through 14 is that circumcision would be a covenant between Yahweh and his people Israel, okay? And it's not it wasn't intended for any other people besides Abraham's descendants through Isaac and Jacob, okay? Verse 15. And God said to Abraham, as for Sarai, your wife, you shall not call her name Sarai, but Sarah shall her name be. And I will bless her and give you a son also of her. Yea, I will bless her, and she shall be a mother of nations. Kings of people shall be of her. And again, here we have only the children of Israel have had kings and queens come through Abraham and Sarah. No other people on the face of this earth, especially the Jews. The Jews have never had any kings and queens except for the Herodians. And, so all these prophecies that we've been quoting here in chapter 17 only apply to the children of Israel and no one else. Verse 17. Then Abraham fell upon his face and laughed and said in his heart, shall a child be born to him that is 100 years old? And shall Sarah that is 90 years old bear? And Abraham said to God, oh, that Ishmael might live before you. And God said, Sarah, your wife, shall bear you a son indeed, and you shall call his name Ishak, and I will establish my covenant with him for an everlasting covenant, and with his seed after him. So here we go. It's the descendants of Isaac. That's the descendants of Isaac that will be in Genesis 21:12, which we'll get to later. The seed, the children of Isaac, will be called after his name. Verse 20. And as for Ishmael, I have heard you. Behold, I have blessed him and will make him fruitful and will multiply him exceedingly. 12 princes shall he father, and I will make him a great nation also. But my covenant will I establish with Isaac, which Sarah shall bear to you at this set time in the next year. So we have a major distinction between Ishmael and Isaac. Again, folks, anybody who tells you that the covenants are broadly transmitted from one person to the rest of the human race, or from one race to the rest of the other human races, folks, that is a lie, because the Bible is very clear. Every time it uses the word covenant, it's exclusively with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. It never includes any other group, or certainly it doesn't include any churches.
And that goes for the New Testament also.
Yes.
Because Ishmael was circumcised.
Mm-hmm.
Genesis chapter 17, verses 25 and 26.
Mm-hmm.
And that circumcision still is not good enough. The promise is through lineage, and it's through a chosen lineage.
Mm-hmm.
And Ishmael's mother was from Ham.
Right.
And Ham was not chosen to bear the promise, so Ishmael could not be the heir of Abraham.
Right.
Period.
Right.
It had to be a child from Sarah. And Yahweh stressed that the lineage had to be correct so much that he put a 99-year-old woman through the pain of bearing
right.
child.
Right.
And that is I believe, a severe warning to us of what how important it is to have it through the proper genetics,
mm-hmm.
through the chosen line.
Right.
And it's not white supremacy. It's just the way Yahweh wants it.
That's right.
He wants this promise through these people and this seed alone, period. And if you're 99
right.
and we need a heir, you're going to have a baby, and it's just tough if you're old.
Right, sure.
Now, Paul in Galatians chapter 4, verses 30 and 31 says, but what does the writing say? Cast out the servant woman and her son, meaning
mm-hmm.
Hagar and Ishmael.
Right.
So circumcision, it doesn't mean anything. It's genes.
That's right.
For by no means shall the son of the servant woman inherit along with the son of the free. And then he tells the Galatians, but we, brethren, we are not the children of the servant woman, but of the free.
That's right.
And they're elsewhere in Galatians, for he told the Galatians that they were children of Isaac according to or down through the flesh.
Yes, exactly.
Now the Galatians were, they were the Cimmerians, they were descendants of the Cimmerians, that's demonstrated in history, who were the Cymry of the deportations of the Israelites by the Assyrians.
Right.
And that is how...
Named after King Omri, yes.
Right, and that is how they are children of Isaac down through the flesh, as Paul told them.
Right.
And that's how they're children of the free woman,
yeah,
as Paul told them.
Yeah, now the...
Galatians are Israelites, and that's why Paul brings his message.
Yeah, and the Catholicizers of Paul, because the word Catholic means universal, the Catholicizers of Paul totally ignore those verses in Galatians because it's very clear that Paul is teaching that the Ishmaelites can't be part of the covenant.
Right, and even if you want to accept the claims of the Arabs that they're Ishmaelites, well, that's fine, but
yes,
don't try to make them Christians.
That's right. Don't try to make them covenanters because they're not.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. And circumcision by itself doesn't make you a covenanter.
And
okay.
Ishmael was circumcised, but he couldn't join the covenant.
What am I trying to say? And when the will is read and the heirs are given their division, nobody except the direct descendants of the testator can be included in the reading of the will.
Absolutely.
So we have all these churches, we have all these other races staking a claim at the reading of the will, but the reading of the will only says Israel, folks. It doesn't say spiritual Israel. It doesn't say church. It doesn't say blacks, Latinos, and Mexicans. It only says Israel. And the Jews don't count either because they're not Israel either. Okay? All right. Where do you want to go from here?
Well, we could read Genesis 18:9-15, it only reinforces everything we ever said, and it's Yahweh's command that Sarah would have a son.
Okay, well, let me start reading at verse 9, and you just interject where you have comments, okay? And they said to him, "Where is Sarah, your wife?" And said, "Behold, in the tent." And he said, "I will certainly return to you according to the time of life, and lo, Sarah, your wife shall have a son." And Sarah heard it in the tent door, which was behind him. Now Abraham and Sarah were old and well stricken in age, and it ceased to be with Sarah after the manner of women. In other words, she probably was
in
the
menopause already.
Menopause, yeah. Therefore Sarah laughed within herself, saying, "After I am waxed old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord being old also?" And of course, when she laughed...
They didn't have Viagra in these days.
No, that's right. But when she laughed, that's what the name Isaac means. The name Isaac means laughter.
Yes, but oddly, she was already told that she would call him Isaac.
Yeah, right.
So maybe the last laugh is on Yahweh.
Of course, of course. he has a sense of humor. Verse 13, "And Yahweh said to Abraham, wherefore did Sarah laugh, saying, shall I of a surety bear a child which am old?" Verse 14, "Is anything too hard for the Lord? At the time appointed, I will return to you according to the time of life, and Sarah shall have a son."
And again, this just—it's an example of how much of how much Yahweh has stressed and how important it is that the heir and the chosen line be by the genetics of his children,
right,
of Shem, of Adam, of Shem, of Abraham, and down, and not through Ham, even though Ham was white. I mean,
right,
he screwed up, and he was punished for that, but he was still a white son of Noah,
right,
and Hagar
right,
was certainly a white daughter of Ham,
yes,
but that still isn't good enough. So even, I mean, the discrimination is also against other
right,
Adamic people.
Right, right. Now, and I want to stress, too, that this is obviously a racist message. There's no doubt about this. And the fact is that the DNA of the white race includes the capabilities, the intellectual capabilities, the technological capabilities. You know, you're talking about philosophy, religion, things that no other race has ever accomplished. Okay.
And also the moral capabilities.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Because all of the knowledge in the world without morals leads to destruction.
Right, and that's where grace comes in. And you know, that's why this is a message of race and grace. It's not simply, it's not white supremacism, folks. In fact, it's a responsibility. It's a responsibility to carry out the laws of Yahweh. And if we fail to do that, what did Peter say? Punishment begins. Judgment begins at our house. We bear the responsibility of obeying the law, and when we fail to do so, we get punished. This is not supremacism, folks. This takes humility to, you know, to be an heir and carry out the legacy that has been given to us. It's a responsibility. It's a duty. Okay? It has nothing to do with supremacism. And I don't care what other people think about it. It's our duty. It's our responsibility to carry out the law and to carry out the promises. Am I wrong, Bill?
That's absolute.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Where do we go from here?
We could go ahead to Genesis 21, 1 to 13.
Okay.
And I'll start at verse 2.
Okay.
For Sarah conceived and bare Abraham a son in his old age at the set time of which Yahweh had spoken to him. And Abraham called the name of his son that was born unto him, whom Sarah bare to him, Isaac. And Abraham circumcised his son Isaac, being 8 days old, as Yahweh commanded him.
Mm-hmm.
And Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born unto him.
Yes.
And Sarah said, God hath made me to laugh. And actually, it's probably, by my guess, about 1975 B.C.
Okay.
God hath made me to laugh, so that all here will laugh with me. And she said, who would have said unto Abraham that Sarah should have given suck?
Mm-hmm.
For I have borne him a son in his old age. And the child grew and was weaned, and Abraham made a great feast the same day that Isaac was weaned.
Yes.
Now, I'm surprised this went this far.
Yes.
And Sarah saw the son of Hagar the Egyptian. Now, it was very common in those days and all the way up through the Middle Ages for a king or somebody who's going to come to a throne, an heir,
yes,
mm-hmm. to be bumped off by the competing brothers,
sure.
or the children of the competing wives.
That's
right. And when in all of the ancient palaces, and this is very prevalent in Persian history, but right. also in the history of many other later nations.
Oh yeah,
the Roman Caesars were constantly bumping off their first cousins and their brothers.
Right. Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah, even the Parthians were guilty of that. They were
right.
killing each other off constantly.
And that was to eliminate the other possible heirs.
That's right.
And this is definitely an example of that, where Sarah looks
mm-hmm.
and says, Hagar's got to go.
That's right.
And Ishmael, they have to go.
Yes.
Wherefore she said unto Abraham, cast out this bondwoman and her son. Now, this is the same verse Paul quotes in Galatians 4.
Right, right.
For the son of this bondwoman shall not be the heir with my son, even with Isaac.
Yes.
And the thing was very grievous in Abraham's sight. Abraham loved Ishmael.
Of course he did.
He loved this,
of
but
course
he had
did.
To part with him.
Right.
And that's just the way it is.
But the
and
promises
again,
the promises were given through Sarah, not through Hagar.
Absolutely.
Right.
And that's just the way it is, and Abraham did it.
Right.
And that was probably a very difficult thing to do for him to eliminate his oldest son.
Yeah.
He's got to be at least 15, 18 years old by
yeah.
now.
Yeah, he had to listen to his wife.
Yeah, well,
God,
that probably
God forbid. Okay. So he listened to his wife, and he sent Hagar away. How about that? Praise Yahweh. And, of course, we find Rebecca in the same situation with Isaac, and the woman won out in that case too, and rightfully so. So, okay, yeah, please continue.
Well, that's, and God said unto Abraham, let it not be grievous in thy sight because of the lad, because that's his will,
mm-hmm.
and because of thy bondwoman,
exactly.
Hagar.
And yes.
all that Sarah had said unto thee, hearken unto her voice, for in Isaac shall thy seed be called.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And that was it.
The Saxons. That's why the children of Israel are called the Anglo-Saxons, folks. That's the children of Israel are not called Jews.
Well, it's extremely likely. I would call it extremely likely that is the derivation of the Persian word Saka,
mm-hmm.
which was the Persian designation for the Assyrian Cymri,
right.
and or the children of the Israelites. The
right.
Persians called them Saka. And they're actually, those two words appear on ancient inscriptions together, the Cymri and the Saka, because most of those ancient inscriptions were bilingual.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever
right.
the Persians made an inscription in Elamite or in Aramaean and mentioned the Saka, they would have a bilingual Akkadian version of the inscription. And there's many instances of this, and I quote one of them in my essay, German Origins, Part 1, and I cite it, and the language in the Akkadian and the inscription is the exact same language identifying the Cimmerians that Herodotus uses in the Greek. And Herodotus is describing the same inscription, and it's a given. It's positive. And this inscription, where it says in Persian Saka, it says in Akkadian Cumri, which is the Greek Cimmerian.
Right, exactly.
And they're all, and it's very clear to me that Saka almost definitely comes from the name Isaac, the Sakans, Saxons.
And the Welsh today still refer to themselves as the Cumru, which comes from Cimmerian.
Yes, and they probably, I believe that those Cimmerians, actually, they're not, a lot of identity writers try to put them in Britain at far too early a period.
Yes.
I mean, even before the deportations of the Israelites.
Mm-hmm.
They
mm-hmm.
were not, there were Phoenicians that were Israelites in Britain and in Wales at 1300
right.
B.C. Don't get me wrong, but they weren't the Cimmeri,
right.
but a Cumru.
Well, the way I see it is that the Cumru are being the Welsh. They were part of the, you know, 10 nations of Israel, the northern 10 tribes,
but they left before the deportations. No, I believe that the Cumru of Wales were of the deportations. You see, the Cimmerians, according to all anthropologists and archaeologists and you know prehistoric European historians or whatever, pre-recorded history, European chroniclers, the people that tried to go back and piece things together,
right.
the Cimmerians disappeared on the Hungarian plains about 500 B.C.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
And that's in encyclopedias and history books. Now, in 400 B.C., the Gauls appear on the frontier of Rome.
Right.
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
The Cimmerians probably about that time dispersed into northern Germany and about that time crossed into Britain.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And also a lot of them stayed behind in Germany and later went on to invade Rome. And they're the Gauls that the Romans fought with and that settled in northern Italy. And, you know, their population exploded at very highly at that time.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Do you want to go into the sacrifice or potential sacrifice of Isaac in chapter 22?
Well, we can discuss that because that's important. And
yes.
That's very important to the two-seed line message.
Okay. All right, let me read verses 1 and 2. And it came to pass after these things that God did tempt Abraham and said to him, Abraham, and he said, Behold, here am I. And he said, Take now your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and get you into the land of Moriah, and offer him there for a burnt offering upon one of the mountains which I will tell you of. Now, of course, Yahweh already told Abraham that he was going to make kings and queens and nations out of Isaac.
Absolutely. So
yes.
Abraham must have known that something, there had to be another plan. It just wasn't being revealed to him.
There was something was up. Exactly. Verse 3, And Abraham rose up early in the morning and saddled his ass and took two of his young men with him, and Isaac his son, and split the wood for the burnt sacrifice, and rose up and went to the place which God had told him. Then on the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place afar off. And, of course, we go through the story. And, you know, and when Isaac's laying there on the sacrificial altar, he says, Father, where is the sacrifice? Okay. And then as he raised his knife, getting ready to, you know, because apparently he heard God's word asking him to do that. Verse 10, And Abraham stretched forth his hand and took the knife to slay his son. Verse 11, And the angel of Yahweh called to him out of heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, Here am I. And he said, Lay not your hand upon the lad, neither do you anything to him, for now I know that you fear God, seeing that you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. Now, of course, in verse 1, the translation here says tempt, okay? And, of course, Yahweh does not tempt us, he tests us.
Yes.
It should be test.
Now this is a great display of faith on Abraham's part. And all mainstream churches talk about that very well, and that's all well and good. And it's true, and I'm not disparaging any of it. However, there's something here that all mainstream churches absolutely miss.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tradition in every ancient Mesopotamian, Near Eastern, and Mediterranean and European religion.
Mm-hmm.
That something placed on the altar of a god
right.
becomes the property of that god.
Right.
Period.
Yes.
Forever. Mm-hmm. When you dedicate something to the temple
yes.
of any pagan god, it becomes the property of that god.
Yes.
The world belongs to Satan. We discussed that in Genesis chapter 4,
mm-hmm.
and it tells us Cain was the heir of the world.
Right.
However, all the races of Adam and the children of Adam went off into paganism and basically became the property of those strange gods.
Right.
But when you practice Baal worship, you have sex on the altar of Baal.
Mm-hmm.
That's what those ancient fertility cults are all about.
Right.
You become the property of Baal. You're giving yourself over to Satan. That's what was so important about not practicing those pagan religions. Well, here, Abraham, who is the sovereign over his own son, and that was recognized widely in the ancient world, he gives his son up on the altar of Yahweh. Everything in the loins, everything in the body of Isaac becomes the property of Yahweh.
Yes.
Period.
Yes.
And that means Jacob and Esau.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why in Romans chapter 9, Paul says that from one lump were made two vessels, one for destruction and one for mercy.
Right.
And the vessel for destruction, Paul, I think it's Romans 9:20,
mm-hmm.
20 and 21 and 22, the vessel for destruction are the Edomites in Judea.
That's right.
And the vessel of mercy are the true Israelites.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you read the Old Testament book of Obadiah and Zechariah and many places in Isaiah and Ezekiel and elsewhere, you clearly understand that the Edomites are the ones that are hated by Yahweh.
Absolutely. But from this point forward, really, all the other people in the world, they don't matter to Yahweh.
That's right.
Whatever happens to them happens. He only cares about, and the whole rest of the Bible is primarily focused on, I mean, the other Adamic races and the other Canaanite races
right.
are mentioned, but the focus becomes the struggle between Jacob and Esau.
That's right. That's right. So the initial conflict between, it really wasn't a conflict between Cain and Abel, but what Cain did to Abel is still going on today in terms of what the Edomites are doing to the white race today.
Absolutely.
It's absolutely, yeah.
You know, Esau himself, a lot of identity pastors really stick their necks out there and try to say, well, Esau must have been the progeny of Satan or something because
right.
he was hairy and this and that. But no, there was nothing wrong with Esau himself, except that he despised his birthright, meaning he despised his own race.
That's
and, he,
right.
and he went off and married Hittite women and Canaanite women. And there have been 10 million Esaus in history since Esau.
Exactly. They're all race traitors.
Absolutely.
That's what Esau was. He was a race traitor.
He was to be designated the eternal example of a race traitor.
Right. Exactly.
And Paul says Esau despised his birthright and chased strange flesh.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's amazing that, you know, your Judeo-Christian churches can't get this. it's everywhere. It's everywhere. You know, this talk about seeds and the talk about, you know, what's the birthright? What does birthright mean? It means offspring of the seed line. That's what it means. You know, and consequently, since Esau refused to have Adamite children, that's why the birthright was deprived from him.
Absolutely. The bowl of porridge only officiated it.
Right.
That's all it did. It,
right.
It was already a done deal.
Right.
Rebecca had already taken Jacob and gotten him the blessing.
Yes.
The bowl of porridge was just a ceremony that officiated the despisal of the birthright.
Yeah. Let me continue.
Selling it a birthright.
Right. Let me continue verses 16 through 18 here. Let me back up to 12, let me back up all the way to 11 again. And the angel of the Lord called him out of heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham, he said, here I am. And he said, lay not your hand upon the lad, neither do you anything to him, for now I know that you fear God, seeing you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. And Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him, a ram caught in a thicket by its horns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered him up for a burnt offering in the stead of his son. Now, I forget where else it's talked about, but this the scapegoat. This is actually the first instance of a scapegoat, okay? And where it appears, I forgot where it appears in other sections of the Bible, but that scapegoat.
It's in Leviticus 16.
Leviticus 16. That word scapegoat is translated from the Hebrew Azazel.
Yes.
Which is one of the fallen angels.
Yes, and actually Yahweh is saying in Leviticus 16, he's saying, one goat for me and one goat for Azazel.
Right.
In other words, the goat that gets sacrificed, that's Yahweh's goat.
That's right.
And the goat that gets cut off in the wilderness, that's saying to the devil, okay, I got mine, you go get yours.
Right, right. You're cast out in the wilderness forever. That's prophetic. That's absolutely prophetic. Okay, verse 14. And Abraham called the name of that place Yahweh Yireh, which means Yahweh provides, as it is said to this day, in the mount of Yahweh it shall be seen. And the angel of the Lord called Abraham out of heaven the second time, saying, by myself have I sworn, saith Yahweh, for because you have done this thing and have not withheld your son, your only son. Now, of course, this is also prophetic, because Yahweh did not withhold his only son, right?
Well, right, but actually this is the important thing here is that Isaac was placed on the altar and dedicated to Yahweh.
Yes.
And
yes.
Yahweh provided the goat. Abraham didn't, so
right.
Isaac belongs to Yahweh now.
Exactly.
And even though it doesn't really explicitly explain all that, that is what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But when you read what goes on in the ancient religions, that's exactly what happened here.
Yes, yes. And, of course, it's also symbolic of the fact that Yahweh the Father will sacrifice his own son, Yahshua, okay? It's multiplicity of symbolism here. Verse 17, that in blessing I will bless you, and in multiplying I will multiply your seed, again, your offspring, as the stars of the heaven and as the sand which is upon the seashore, and your seed shall possess the gate of his enemies, and, of course, that means in military terminology, that's owning, their villages, their cities. Verse 18, and in your seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because you have obeyed my voice. Now, who, which seed, which nation, which offspring has blessed the world?
Well, I don't look at this. I know you look at this verse that way, but I don't look at this verse that way.
Okay.
This is the way I look at this verse. The nations only means the other Adamic nations.
Okay.
It's the other Genesis 10 Adamic nations. That's
okay,
all it can mean, because they're the only focus of the Bible.
Right, okay.
The other races, they're not nations. They weren't listed in Genesis 10.
Right.
They have no part in the Bible.
So, okay,
now,
so, yeah, go
if
ahead.
If you go back, and we discussed this, if you go back to Genesis chapter 3, it says of Adam,
right,
lest he reach his hand out and grasp the tree of life,
mm-hmm,
that he may live forever. Yahshua Christ is the tree of life.
Mm-hmm.
Israel is the chosen line.
Right.
Abraham,
okay.
Isaac, Jacob.
Yeah.
Now, if there's no tree of life, then the rest of the Adamic race is not going to be able to grasp it.
Right.
And is not going to live forever.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Okay.
So because of Abraham's seed, which is not only Yahshua Christ,
right,
but all of the people, the nation that affected the will of Yahweh in order to get to the point where Yahshua Christ could come as a man,
mm-hmm,
and redeem Israel. And the reasons for the redemption, the primary reason is to redeem Israel, but the secondary reason is to burst the gates of hell and
right,
free the whole, to lead captivity captive,
right,
and
right,
free the whole race.
Okay.
From the stigmatism that was put on the Adamic race,
right,
at the fall in the garden.
Okay. Well, so you're talking, yes, absolutely. But it seems to me you're mainly not limiting to, but stressing the nations of Genesis 10.
Right, and the redemption that they have because of,
right,
because of the coming restoration that,
yeah,
they have, let's put it that way.
Right, and
because of Abraham's seed.
Yeah, and there's absolutely no doubt about that. The reason why I give this a broader interpretation is because in Genesis chapter 3, my opinion, I think Dr. Wesley Swift and Bertrand Comparé, and I'm sure you would agree, that this planet was already under the dominion of the fallen angels, and whatever races existed on this planet, whether created by Yahweh or whether created by hybridization.
Right.
Okay.
Well, that's true.
We'll also, incidentally, be better off and, quote-unquote, blessed as a result of all this. Okay?
Well, you know, the Jews aren't going to feed the world.
No, they're not.
But
no.
They will feed the world if the white man grows the grain and yeah, the Jew could make money trading it.
Right, right. Yes. And the Jews in particular, as the descendants of Esau, Edom, will not be part of this blessing. Absolutely not. They are actually singled out as being told, you will not get any of this. You know, your time is limited, and that's called the judgment day. When the judgment day is over, there shall no more be a Canaanite to oppress the children of Israel. Zechariah 14:21. So, you know, I see pretty much that, you know, the other races are still going to be around. They're going to benefit from our presence, but they can't, you know, they can't race mix with us. It's
well,
over.
I more or less see the future as through the lens of the parable of the sheep and the goats.
Okay.
I mean,
well,
the sheep and his goats, and we know who the sheep are, and all the goats go
right
to eternal destruction.
Okay.
And every plant that my heavenly Father did not plant will be rooted up.
Right.
And
right.
Yahweh planted Adam here.
Okay.
Did he plant these other races?
Well, what about Genesis chapter 1? I mean,
well, I understand that there is a beast creation of bipeds.
Right. Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
However, which one of these other races is that beast creation?
Well, yeah.
Which
to me,
one? Yeah, can you point to one? You can't point to any of them and say, that's them.
Well,
we don't know.
All right. Well, the question that's raised is, you know, did the other races, like the Chinese, you know, the Orientals?
Well, they're worshippers of the serpent.
Oh, of course. Oh, there's no doubt about that.
And they have recessive genes that showed that they may have descended from apes.
Right.
I'm
sure.
Not kidding either.
Right, right. No, I'm not questioning any of that. It's just a question of whether these races pre-existed in Genesis chapter 1 and before the Adamic race was created in verses 26 and 27.
But what I'm saying is that any one of these other races, it could be the pygmies, it
yes
could be several of them, it could be the Eskimos. Whichever
mm-hmm
ones were part of the beast creation
yes
will probably continue to exist.
Okay, yeah.
If they are in their pure form.
Okay, yeah. Like I said, all race mixing will be abolished forever.
Right, but also mm-hmm all the products of mixed race. All
right,
the plants
yeah
that Yahweh did
yeah
not plant.
And
that probably covers the greater number of the other races.
Right, okay.
That's
I
just
see
the fact of history.
Okay, now I see where you're coming from. Okay, yeah, I have no problem with that.
That's just the fact of history. That,
right.
That's not hate. It's just
stating
a fact.
Yahweh's original order of things, like after like, kind, you know, kind after kind, will be reestablished.
Right.
Yeah. And,
but the American Negro and most of the races in Africa and Asia are mixed.
Right, right. Now, there's two things that can happen here. The mixed breeds can simply die out because there's not going to be any more race mixing, or they will be destroyed at the judgment day.
Well,
you know,
right, and the it's definitely not our place to rid the world of them.
No.
However,
no, it's Yahweh's decision, yeah.
You're either a sheep or a goat.
Right.
And
right.
And we know who the sheep are.
Mm-hmm.
And the goats are going into eternal perdition. And that's what Yahshua Christ said, Matthew chapter 25. It's very clear.
Yes.
And you know, he goes on and talks about visiting in prison and sick and this and that. Well, first, we're the only race that builds
right, hospitals
and hospitals.
Right.
Okay, the other races don't build prisons or hospitals.
Right, yeah.
But aside from that...
Well, they build prisons, but not hospitals.
aside from that, well, they learned how to build prisons from us. They just
yeah,
kill each
right
other before that.
Right, okay.
Aside from that, those things only represent, they're only illustrative of the nations that have generally followed his will and the nations that have not.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And only the Adamic Israelite nations have followed his
yeah
will.
Yeah, and that's there's no debating that.
None of the other nations can claim that.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely. Okay. All right, so let's jump down to verses 34 Actually, let me quote verse 24 real quickly. And Yahweh appeared to him the same night and said, I am the God of Abraham, your father. Fear not, for I am with you and will bless you and multiply your seed for my servant Abraham's sake. He's speaking here to Isaac, I believe.
I'm very sorry. I don't even know what chapter.
Oh, you're in. Maybe I accidentally turned the page. Where did I leave off?
well, we were in Genesis 22.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Somehow I wound up in Genesis 26. Okay.
Yeah, that's a little jump of the gun.
Stop
at Genesis.
I was 24. Probably looking for something and then forgot to turn back. Sorry.
Yes, we need to stop at Genesis 24, 1 to 9.
Okay. All right.
When we're done here.
Okay, let me just quickly turn the page back to there. Okay, Genesis 24, 1 through 9?
Yes.
And Abraham was old and well stricken in age, and Yahweh had blessed Abraham in all things. And Abraham said to his eldest servant of his house that ruled over all that he had, put, I pray you, your hand under my thigh, and I will make you swear by Yahweh, the God of heaven and the God of earth, that you shall not take a wife to my son of the daughters of the Canaanites.
So Abraham's a racist.
Right. Among whom I dwell.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. It is. In fact, in Deuteronomy, we find out that those Canaanites are evil, and we are to make no covenants with them. In fact, Yahweh instructed the Israelites to exterminate the Canaanites.
Absolutely. And Abraham clearly knew how important it was for Isaac to have a wife from the appropriate stock.
Right.
Now, with this in mind, I mean, Abraham is the grandfather of Esau.
Right.
You know your grandfather's will.
That's right.
There's no doubt about it. You lived for 100 years with her. I mean, these people lived, Abraham lived until he was like 175 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He knew Esau.
Right.
And Isaac knew Abraham's will because Isaac was the one that had to get his wife.
That's right.
All the way up in Padan Aram.
Right.
Aram. So Esau had to know the will of his fathers.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And he fucked it.
Yes, absolutely. But he was rebellious. Okay, verse 4, but you shall go to my country and to my kindred folks, underline the word kindred, and take a wife to my son Isaac. Okay, so he's giving specific instructions to find a wife for Isaac from his kindred, okay, and especially not from among the Canaanites, okay? Verse 5.
Well, that's explicit.
Yes.
Not take a daughter under my son.
Or yeah,
daughter,
yeah.
A wife under my son, a daughter of the Canaanite.
But if all races are acceptable to the covenant people, you know, why make this exception?
Right. Well, that thought is a lie, and the exception has to be made because they're not our race. They're
mixed. Right. That's right. This is a racist book, folks. Get used to it. Verse 5. And the servant said to him, perhaps the woman will not be willing to follow me to this land. Must I needs bring your son again to the land from where you came? And Abraham said to him, beware that you bring not my son there again. The Yahweh God of heaven, which took me from my father's house and from the land of my kindred, which spoke to me and that you swore to me, saying, take your seed, to your seed will I give this land. He shall send his angel before you, and you shall take a wife from my son there. So in other words, he's saying, no, it's not necessary for Isaac to go back there. This angel will guide you.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And this servant is almost surely of the same stock anyway.
Right.
Abraham had brought a great number of men with him from the village of his fathers when he came to Canaan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And in verse 8, and if the woman will not be willing to follow you, then you shall be clear from this my oath. Only bring not my son there again. So for some reason, Abraham does not want Isaac to go back, and for fear that he won't come back to this country. Verse 9, and the servant put his hand under the thigh of Abraham, his master, and swore to him concerning that matter. Okay, so any further comments here?
No, I think that the important things have been stressed, and you're right, he didn't want Isaac to go
yeah.
back.
Yeah, because...
Say, hey, I kind of like it up here in the hills.
Right.
There ain't none of those Canaanites around.
Exactly. So, let's see. Okay, where else did you want to go to from here?
Genesis 25, 1 to 6.
Okay,
then
all right.
Abraham took a wife, and her name was Keturah. And she bare him Zimran and Jokshan and Medan and Midian.
Mm-hmm.
That Midian is the father of the Midianites... from whom Moses later took a wife.
Mm-hmm.
She was a daughter of daughter of Midian, who was the son of Abraham and Keturah. Keturah is a white woman Abraham takes as a concubine after Sarah dies.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the Judeo-Christian assertion that Moses married a black Ethiopian woman is just crazy.
Right.
Here we have Midian, who this daughter, Jethro, was a priest of the Midianites. He's
right.
A high priest of Midian. This is their father.
Yes.
And they were white, and Moses' wife was,
right.
was white.
Yeah, and then, you know, obviously you have to take into consideration the historical perspective as well, because later on, you know, the Midianites and the Israelites did become enemies, but not, you know, not until much later. So, you know, if they had wars against each other,
Well, it's very obvious that first there were different pockets of Midianites.
Right.
I mean, just like there were different pockets of Hittites and Amorites and all these, you know, all the Hittites were exterminated.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's only in this place.
Right.
There's a whole lot more 100 miles away we're not discussing here.
Well, here, I got a quote from the Jewish Encyclopedia discussing this very thing, and it's under the definition of the word Kenites, okay? And we understand that the word Kenite, and if you look up a concordance, it will tell you that the word Kenite means descendant of Cain.
Yeah,
okay?
It's definitely the patronymal of
right.
Cain.
And, but it also means workers of metal, okay?
Yeah.
So here's what the Jewish Encyclopedia has to say. A tribe of Palestine. Palestine? They predate Palestine, folks. Mentioned in the time of Abraham as possessing a part of the promised land, Genesis 15:19. At the Exodus, it inhabited the vicinity of Sinai and Horeb, and it belonged to Jethro, the father-in-law of Moses. Really? The Kenites? Was Jethro a Kenite?
Jethro is actually, in one point, called a Kenite.
Okay.
But that is because that land is where the Kenites dwell.
Okay.
And that's another geographic label.
Mm-hmm.
Just the way he's also called an Ethiopian.
Right.
And that's another geographic label.
Okay.
But
right.
we're specifically told that he is the high priest of Midian, and he's
right.
a Midianite.
Yes.
Midian had no land of his own.
Right.
That has to be a racial label,
okay.
a family label.
Yes. Okay. Now, continuing here, Jethro is said to have been a priest of Midian and a Midianite. Hence, the conclusion seems justified that the Midianites and Kenites are identical.
Well, that's a load of
you know, it's a load of you know what?
Jewish horse manure.
Jewish horse manure, exactly.
Well, that would probably be donkey manure. I'm
yeah,
sorry.
Right. Okay.
Yeah,
and plus they don't talk about the fact that Kenite means descendant of Cain. They don't mention
that
at all.
And the Midianites are distinguished over and over again from each other in Genesis.
Yeah.
However, it's clear that later on some of the tribes of Midian, of the Midianites, did mingle with the Canaanites.
Right.
And they were told, the children of Israel were told to exterminate them.
Right. Exactly. And the Midianites among them.
And that's because they mingled with the Canaanites.
That's right. That's right. Of course, the Jewish Encyclopedia doesn't get into that.
No, it wouldn't get into that.
Yeah. Continuing then.
Definitely in the scripture.
Right. The Kenites journeyed with the Israelites to Palestine. I don't think that's true.
No, the Kenites are already in Palestine
right.
before the Israelites get there.
Right.
That's why the Kenites are mentioned in Genesis 15,
mm-hmm.
and we know that the Israelites don't get there until the book of Joshua,
right.
or Deuteronomy at least.
Exactly. So that's another bold-faced lie, okay?
Well, that's the typical Jewish source.
That's right. And their encampment, apart from the ladders, was noticed by Balaam. Okay, so Balaam noticed a certain encampment of Kenites, apparently is what they're trying to say here. But if they had a separate encampment, they weren't part of Israel.
Well, the Kenites were all over Palestine,
right.
And that's clear. We're going to discuss that later on.
Yeah, okay. Continuing here, at a later period, some of the Kenites separated from their brethren in the south and went to northern Palestine, Judges 4:11, where they existed in the time of Saul. The kindness which they had shown to Israel in the wilderness was gratefully remembered, quote, "He showed kindness to all the children of Israel when they came up out of Egypt," unquote, said Saul to them, 1 Samuel 15:6.
That is true.
Mm-hmm.
The Kenites were the typical placating Jews.
That's right.
And Saul remembered that.
Yes.
And when Saul went to make war against the Amalekites,
right,
he warned the Kenites who were dwelling amongst the Amalekites to leave.
That's right.
Now, that probably wasn't right to do, but Saul didn't do anything right anyway.
Yes. Well, the Jewish Encyclopedia neglects the warning. It suggests that they, of their own good-heartedness, assisted the Israelites. Of course, we know that's not true. Okay? And then so they were not only spared by him, but David allowed them to share in the spoil that he took from the Amalekites. Okay.
Well, that's like the House of Rothschild has been very helpful to both the English and the Germans.
Yes.
To help each other destroy each other for 200 years. And,
yes.
And that's how the Kenites are helpful to...
Yeah. So the basic thrust of this is to try to make the Kenites out as Midianites and basically make them seem not so bad as they really are.
Right, but it's simply not true.
Yeah, it's simply
not
true.
Midianites.
Yeah, so I just thought I'd throw in the Jewish version of what we're talking about here so people understand that, you know, they make things up out of whole cloth, you know, and ignore the history. And, obviously you have to understand that it's just as with Moab and Ammon. Moab and Ammon, they were actually Hebrew Israelite, not Israelite, but Hebrew Shemitic tribes. But they became our enemies.
Yes,
okay?
Because they mingled with the Canaanites.
Right.
And the Bible doesn't say that, but some of the apocryphal literature does.
Okay.
And they, if you look at the Shemitic, where the Shemitic nations are, there's nobody else in Palestine until the Israelites get there.
Right.
Except Canaanites.
Right.
And right. Who would Moab and Ammon have had around to mingle with?
Right.
And they actually, we find them in Sodom and Gomorrah,
right,
and the cities of the plain, and after they destroyed it,
yeah,
the Canaanites in the surrounding areas mingled with the Moabites and the Ammonites.
Yeah, and that was Canaanite territory. Yeah.
Yes.
So it's only natural. You don't even have to speculate that they mingled with the Canaanites. They absolutely did, no doubt about it. Okay. All right, so where do we go from here?
Okay, we have the promise to we see the Keturah's sons are sent off just like Ishmael's sent off.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And even though Isaac is you know, coming into his manhood by this time, Keturah's sons still have to go because the promise is not for them, it's for Isaac.
Right.
And he was to have no competing brethren in order to make the inheritance.
Yes. Okay.
Genesis chapter 25 verses 19 to 27.
Okay.
You may read it if you want.
Yes, okay.
Or I'll read it.
Yeah, we've got about 10 minutes left. Let me read and you comment, okay?
Wow, where'd the time go?
Yeah. And these are the generations of Isaac. Of course, we're talking about descendants here, folks. Abraham's son, Abraham fathered Isaac, and Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah as a wife, the daughter of Bethuel, the Syrian of Padanaram, the sister to Laban, the Syrian. I know you want to comment here.
Yeah, Padanaram is probably the ancient land of Arphaxad, and it's just north of the land of Aram,
mm-hmm,
which is, Aram was a brother of Eber, and Arphaxad was a, Aram was a brother of Arphaxad, and the Hebrews, Eber, descended from Arphaxad,
okay,
and they're living in this land north of the land of Aram, which is called Padanaram,
mm-hmm,
and it's in the foothills of modern Armenia and northern Syria, basically.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. And so we're definitely talking about the kinsmen, the kindred of Abraham and Isaac, okay?
Absolutely.
Right. Verse 20.
The descendants of the Hebrews live there.
Yes. Okay. Verse 21. And Isaac entreated Yahweh for his wife because she was barren, and Yahweh was entreated of him, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. And the children struggled together inside her, and she said, "If it be so, why am I thus?" And she went to inquire of Yahweh. So Rebekah, and like Sarah, was able to speak directly with Yahweh. Okay.
Yes.
So very highly rated women here. And, of course, none of us Israelites today can say the same, although I've heard people claim that the Lord spoke to them. And,
one clown wrote a book about it and made probably made a few million dollars.
Yeah, right, and it's all wrong.
Yeah, it is all wrong.
Right, okay. Verse 23, and Yahweh said to her, two nations are in your womb, and two manner of people shall be separated from your bowels, and the one people shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger. So this, I love to underline two manner of people. Now, of course, we're talking about Edomites versus Israelites, aren't we?
Right, and it's not that Esau was a stranger, it's that Yahweh foresaw what Esau was going to be about.
Right.
And being God, he can't help but see the future.
I mean,
that's why he's God.
Yeah.
We're people.
And we're very predictable.
Right.
Painfully so. Okay. And the one people shall be stronger than the other people. Now, of course, throughout history, haven't the Jews served the kings and queens of Israel?
Well, yes, they did, and Solomon had them enslaved, it was also predicted in a different prophecy that Esau would break that yoke, and he
right.
is now.
Right, and we've always been greater in number, the Israelite white race, and of course our kindred, the rest of the white race, have always been greater in number than the Jews. So, I mean, all these prophecies, once you understand the difference between Jews and Israelites, all of this prophecy becomes immediately clear. But if you think the Jews are Israelites, how can you make any sense out of this?
Well, that's why the Jews want to use that lie to destroy the Bible
yes.
in the minds of Christians.
That's right.
So that we don't investigate these things.
That's right. That's right.
And they want to discredit the entire Bible, so they use a false piety to discredit the entire Bible.
Right, and they claim to be the custodians of the Old Testament, which they are not. They're distorting everything that they present to the world. It's total distortion. And you're absolutely right. Those people who think the Bible is a Jewish book, especially among the white race, since it doesn't make any sense to them.
And nothing's ever been fulfilled in it.
Right. It makes absolutely no sense. They reject it.
Absolutely.
And so you can see the true purpose of the Jews is to destroy the Bible.
Absolutely.
Not to maintain it or preserve it, folks. Their intent is to destroy it. How can the devil be any more clever or sinister than to persuade people that he is preserving the Old Testament in order to destroy it? That's what's really happening, folks. And every rabbi is in the business of deceiving Christians and, of course, the rest of the world with these false interpretations of Scripture. Because if you take their version of it, it just doesn't make sense. None of the prophecies come true. And they're always trying to predict that the state of Israeli is the regathering of the 12 tribes. What 12 tribes, folks? What 12 tribes? How can the Jews, who are 95% Khazar, they're not even Shemites, be a fulfillment of any prophecy concerning Israel? It's ridiculous.
None whatsoever.
Okay.
I would like to move ahead to Genesis 27, 46, and quote that, and bear in mind that by this time,
okay.
Isaac and Esau had reached manhood.
Right.
And Esau had already married Hittite women, even though that's not, that, you know, all his descendants aren't enumerated until Genesis chapter 36.
Yes.
And Rebekah makes a statement here.
Okay.
And Rebekah says to Isaac, I am weary of my life because of the daughters of Heth.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the Hittites.
Right.
If Jacob takes a wife of the daughters of Heth, such as these which are daughters of the land, what good shall my life do me?
Mm-hmm.
So Rebekah, like Abraham, is a racist.
That's right.
And that's to her credit.
She hates
She's rewarded
Hittites.
For that.
she
might be
Hittites.
Despised by the people, but she'll be rewarded by Yahweh for
mm-hmm.
that.
But even Yahweh says he hates these people. So she's absolutely right in doing likewise.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Well, okay, I tell you what. Let's. I want to discuss more of chapter 25, verses 24 through 34, because this is the famous encounter between Esau and Jacob, okay? And because, you know, we've been stressing it, and the mainstream churches try to make Jacob out to be the bad guy here, that somehow he's tricked Esau into giving up his birthright, but that's not the case. Okay.
Of course.
And that's why I want to go into this in detail to show that the mainstream Judeo-Christian interpretation is absolutely wrong. They try to make Jacob out to be the impish, you know, person tricking Esau, and that's not at all what happened. And you can only get that interpretation by distorting this actual record here. Okay. So I want to discuss that in more detail. All right. So very good. For today, I even forgot what number. I think we're on today's episode 12 of the Two Seed Line story. So next week we'll cover. Oh, okay. I'm going to be out of town next week. So
yes,
Bill,
next week I'm planning to have Clifton Emmaheiser here on Friday night, and probably have it's going in the direction of just a general Two Seed Line discussion.
Okay.
And we'll probably recover a lot of ground, but we'll get it from Clifton's perspective.
Yes. Okay. And I'm not sure exactly what's going to be happening Saturday and Sunday. You know, whatever. I can probably call in on those.
Well, on Sunday, I'm planning on going through some of Paul's epistles. I've been kicking this around all week since you told me to fill in Sunday.
Okay.
And I'm planning on going through Paul's epistles to show that Paul was teaching Israel identity.
Okay. Very good.
And on Saturday, I was going to try to contact Ken Gregg and see if he wanted to do anything in particular for Saturday.
Okay. All right. Very good. So we'll just I'll keep me posted. I'll put out the announcement of, try to be exact as to what exactly is going to be.
I'll have everything gelled by Tuesday, maybe.
Yeah. Okay. And then I can put out a newsletter so everybody knows what's going to be happening next weekend. Okay.
Sure.
All right, and then I just want to remind everybody, tomorrow night, Dr. Rebecca Carly is going to be my guest. We're going to be talking about the so-called swine flu epidemic, which is nothing but man-made Monsanto-bred garbage they want to pump in your veins. And then Sunday, my guest will be Pastor George Udvari with the fourth installment of the series that we have going, and we're going to be talking about the rapture hoax, okay? So that should be a lot of fun. All right? Thanks for joining me again, Bill. It's been a pleasure.
Praise Yahweh.
Praise Yahweh.
My
and,
pleasure.
Okay, and then we'll be seeing all of you again tomorrow night and Sunday morning. Yahweh bless everybody.
Thanks.